Anybody have anything else they want to add? That was great, Cam. Thanks. Okay. For those of you who just entered the room, the topic is spiritual ego, and we're just rattling off different subtopics, and we're taking them one at a time. So the next one on our plate is, drumroll, thinking that you are a loving or good person because you worry about others. You know, this really speaks to false empathy. False empathy is really co-signing my brother's story and entering into his dark dream and believing that I'm feeling their feelings. I know that it seems that when we're going through our healing, that when somebody else is sharing something that hits home, that we are feeling something for them or that we're feeling their feelings, but we're really not. Feelings are not contagious. And the belief that feelings are contagious is actually the error that keeps us afraid to let our brothers speak and share and feel their feelings. When somebody wants to shut someone down and say, like we were talking about with Monica earlier, you know, don't feel your feelings and don't talk about what's going on, or you shouldn't think that way, it is because they feel threatened by that. They believe that it's contagious, that someone can quote unquote bring you down. Well, the only thing that brings a person down are the thoughts in their own mind, their own attack thoughts. And if I feel that I will co-sign my brother's dark dream, it is because it reflects, like Betsy was saying, an unhealed thought in my mind. That's all. So it behooves me to heal that unhealed thought in my mind so that I can come as an open channel for my brother who believes that thought. Help my brother to heal that thought by coming and standing in the truth instead. And the Course in Miracles calls that true empathy. Really standing above the battleground, seeing the truth about the situation and not believing the story. Knowing that feelings and thoughts are not contagious. It's not going to rub off on me. Nobody is going to bring me down. But honestly, really also trusting that nobody gets clean in a mud bath. And if I am surrounded by a whole bunch of people that co-sign the belief that is unhealed in my mind, I might be guided to take a step back and detach from those particular people until I'm able to get to the truth of my mind. And maybe I might get guided to return. This is true with people who have healed from or are healing from a lot of stuff in their dysfunctional family unit where everybody is literally rattling back and forth about poverty or hate or guilt or shame or whatever, that it's really good to detach and ask what is the truth and heal it. And as you're guided, you may be guided to return into the situation with a different perspective, but your vulnerability is not real. You're not vulnerable to anyone for anything. You're not a victim of the world. Your invulnerability will show it to you when you ask for the truth instead and allow your thoughts and your mind to be healed. That has been my experience. It has been the experience of anyone who works A Course in Miracles over time, is that these thoughts do heal and we are freed. Thinking that you're a loving person or a good person because you worry about others is the spiritual ego. It's saying, well, I need to cry when someone's crying, or I need to feel bad when somebody feels bad. That doesn't help anyone. That's almost to say that I need to drown when somebody's drowning. Who gets help by that? No one gets help by that. And I'm only making the error real in my own mind. So it's a cute saying, and it goes, if you pray, why worry? And if you worry, why pray? And what that saying means to me is either God is or he isn't. And so if you're worried about somebody, it's really because it's mirroring back a fear story you have in your own mind. If you're afraid they're going to die, you're afraid of death. If you're afraid they're going to cheat on you, you're afraid of abandonment. You believe you're a body, etc. And so it never is in the world. It's always in the mind. And it's helpful to translate it, open it up, and ask the Holy Spirit for healing. So I'm going to drop the mic for Tom and anybody else that wants to share on this. Thank you.
Thanks. I was just actually, all my thoughts flew out of my mind, but they just returned in time. So I just wanted to say, as far as this true empathy thing is, I know for me that when I am not vigilant enough, it is very easy to hear the stories, to watch the things that happen in this world, and sort of feel false empathy for people and sort of forget that we are all just getting the effects of our thinking. So I went through a period of very sort of intense training when it comes to that, and the way it came through for me was that I had to learn not to judge what things look like. If my brother appears to be doing well, I should see that he is getting the effects of his thinking. If my brother appears to be doing not so well, he is still getting the effects of his thinking. And so there's nothing wrong, it is perfect. Now, if my brother wants to change his thinking, then yeah. But who am I to say my brother's doing good or bad when all that ever happens is he's getting the effects of his thinking, just as I do. So to worry about others means that you must automatically perceive them as victims to something. Yeah. It's not love to worry. It isn't love. It just isn't. Okay? And the flip side of this is that sometimes those who do not understand what true compassion is think that I'm some sort of asshole who's just insensitive and just doesn't get happy or sad. You know? And I really can't explain it. But to me, it is loving to see my brother as one that is creating his experience with his thoughts and therefore just always getting the results of his thinking. That is loving to me. That is loving. Because in that way, I don't deny responsibility on my brother's behalf, and I don't deny my own responsibility for what happens in my life. And I don't deny responsibility for how I see my brother. I am responsible with how I see my brother. I am. And so I could see him as a victim or as some poor, weak little creature, or I can just see him as he is, even if he doesn't see himself that way. It really works. People get a little bit shocked sometimes at my reactions to things, but that's okay. The shock a lot of times comes with a sense of, why is it that way? And why is it that Tom can remain even keeled in this kind of situation, facing this sort of appearance? So it works, but it does make you look a certain way to others that is just really their interpretation. And so that's okay. And so a lot of times we may try and apply the spiritual ego once again and just bend just a little bit, just feel sorry for our brother just a tiny little bit. And as soon as you've done that, that's it. What is an appropriate thing to say when someone is suffering, i.e., if a loved one has died? You don't really have to say anything. You may at times just be guided just to listen. And you don't have to say anything. What matters is how are you seeing your friend? Are you seeing that your friend is justified in his suffering? Or are you seeing that your friend is simply just experiencing something and using thoughts that are causing him this particular experience? So for me, I wouldn't go to a funeral and start teaching on the fact that there's no death. Although if I was guided to do that, and if things were arranged that way, I would do it. But I would never really feel like I need to say something to someone on my own. So yeah, just sometimes just listening, not saying anything is fine. So thank you. Oh, that's why none of you should be surprised ever if I don't get too low if something is happening, or if I don't get too high when something good is happening. It's just all happening. So I'll drop the mic. Thank you.
Monica, it's a really good question. I asked that question before, and I realized that you can't really know what anything is for. Every moment that we are in with somebody, that moment is different. You know, we're not supposed to let any of our past learning tell us what to say or what to do. And so there really isn't any set answer to that. The only answer that is good for it and for all is just to go within and to ask and to allow Spirit to tell you what to say or what to do in that moment. Like Tom said, you might be guided to say something and you might be guided not to say something. I had an experience where there was a lady that I knew and her aunt was dying and she was really, really distraught. Her aunt was in the hospital and I don't know how long it was going to take, and she didn't know how long it was going to take, but you can definitely see that she was intent on suffering. And she asked me what to do about this, and so she was open. And I felt really guided that, yes, I was supposed to talk to her, and that, yes, I was supposed to talk to her about this. So we went outside, and we were talking outside. And what I was guided to say, I didn't even have in my mind a half hour before. But what it was for her, and again, this is just for her own situation, was that the purpose of joining is love. And that if she is sitting in fear and listening to the story in her mind about how she is losing her aunt, she is focusing on the ego's interpretation of it. And that instead of being there and joining with her aunt, it's as if she already lost her, in a sense. The story is she's going to lose her, and by believing that she's going to lose her, she's already making that experience real in her mind. And she said, well, what am I supposed to do? Well, we go with gratitude. So you can go to her and join with her and spend time with her now. Talk about how much you love her and how grateful you are to spend this time with her. Give her that love. And in giving her that love, you will have the experience that you need in this. And it was only what was guided to say to her. I wouldn't go and now preach around to everybody and write a book about how to deal with somebody when they're dying or something. That would be definitely the spiritual ego for me. Not necessarily true for anyone else. They could write books about it and that's fine. But for me, that's what it would be at this point. Unless, of course, like Tom said, I was guided to do it. But in this, she did do that and she did experience the love. And I got a huge lesson in it. Now, in my sharing with her in that moment, it was for me to hear what the Holy Spirit was saying through me. I really needed to hear that. I really did, because you see, I had fears and issues and stories about death, which is kind of ironic considering I nearly died so many years ago that I would still have such an issue about it, but it was unfinished business. So speak or don't speak, do or don't do, but do as guided. Really allow the experience to be, here it is that you feel something coming up when somebody seems to die or seems to be sick. And the pain that you feel may seem to be for them, but it's really for the story of them, you know, really healing that and allowing Spirit at any given moment in the holy instant to heal whatever is causing you suffering in your own mind. Because that's what everything is for. If it's bringing up something for you and you're suffering for it, it could be that you feel body identified. It could be that you're going to grieve the relationship, that you love the experience of being with them, and that's completely understandable. It could be that this is a reflection of a fear that's in your mind that you're going to lose something. You're not going to have a reflection of the separation, that you don't have God. Could be anything. So I have learned that these are experiences for a reason. Nothing happens by accident, and they're up for our healing. So the next one is thinking that you're enlightened because you have experienced revelation but haven't healed your mind. Now, how does this show up? Somebody can have a near-death experience and wake up. Somebody can go through a process and wake up. They can go through a whole bunch of shifts and miracles and wake up, or work the steps in a 12-step program, or do the workbook in the Course in Miracles or whatever. And they get to a point where they start experiencing revelatory experiences. But not understanding what revelatory experiences are, they will confuse it, and the spiritual ego will say, I had this experience before, and now I am enlightened because of it. Now, the error in that is just a slight error, and it's so sneaky of the spiritual ego perspective. Because revelation is the result of the miracles. So when you shift your perception enough that you are in that space of total trust and love, and you experience that direct connection with your source and with God, you can't keep that for very long, because you wouldn't be able to be here and heal the rest of your mind if you did. And in the Manual for Teachers, about Revelation, it talks about this in detail, that these are temporary experiences and that they are the result of the miracle, of the shift in perception. That the miracle is interpersonal and that the revelation is between you and God. And so this is really important because, and this is at any point, anybody can do this. They can hide behind this and say, you know, I am this because I've had this amazing experience of awareness that had happened. But now I'm snipping at people and I have judgments, but that's okay because I'm awakened. I've had this experience. And literally hiding behind it, not continuing to heal the mind, just believing that because they have experienced revelation, that that is it. They are done. They are Gandhi. One last thing I want to say about this is that we are all really enlightened. The truth is beneath our perception, but the awareness of that truth is our job to find. So we need to ask the Holy Spirit for continuous healing, miracles that reveal to us what the truth is. And that revelation experience is the result of it. So we don't make the mistake of taking an instance or a moment of total clarity where we really get our purpose and feel that everything is right with the world, literally rest on our laurels. We do realize that we're here to be healed, and we don't stop and say, okay, I've done it, close the book, I'm done. So I'm going to drop the mic for Tom, who I know has something to say about this because we did talk about this in the manual for teachers.
Thank you. The only thing I can say about this really is, having experienced that experience of revelation, it did change my life. It did. I can't deny that it didn't. But I knew from the very beginning that it was not the end of really anything. I still had to apply what the revelation was into being in a state that is not revelatory. So it's sort of like returning to a more sort of familiar state of mind and allowing the lesson and the message of the revelation to actually start working in your mind and transforming your mind. Now, the experience helps a lot, okay? Because it gives you a sense of certainty where God is no longer a concept. You have had a direct experience of God, and even though you may not be experiencing it now, you just know that God is real, because you can't, no one can have that experience and deny it. It's not possible. Now, it is possible for someone in some way to have an experience like that and not be as prepared for it as they should be, and they can experience some sort of, yeah, psychosis or fear. So for me, the way it happened for me was, I was given the revelation, but then as I sort of returned back into the world, I was given the way to apply that revelation, to teach me how to live in the world and not be of the world. If I was not given those means, and if I was just left with the revelation, I would have gone down a road that probably I did not want to go down. I'd be doing what Lisa's talking about, thinking that this is it and I'm done. But because I was instantaneously given the means, and I had no choice to apply it, I was either going to forget about it or apply it. So I couldn't forget about it, so I had to start applying it. And through that application, the actual revelation became, over time, integrated into my mind. And a lot of things have become habits for me. I no longer really struggle with watching my mind. I don't struggle with willingness. Sometimes, yeah, I'll have resistance. But I see in God my way out. I'm no longer looking for God. I'm open to divine guidance that lets me do my part in God's plan, whom I know to be real because of the experience. But again, I still have to use that light to transform whatever there is left to heal in my mind. But it did help a lot. So I'm going to drop the mic.
Hey, what you just mentioned, that was really helpful too, because it made me realize something else that I didn't say. And that is that when I went through that near-death experience 17, 18 years ago, I was really confused for a while because it had said, you know, take me or heal me to the Holy Spirit. And I really thought that was it, you know, put the key in, turn it, and I'm Gandhi. But it wasn't that way at all. Now was it on? Because now I was in touch with the Holy Spirit and God, and really aware of a state of mind in which there is quiet in my mind and peace in my heart, but that it was a relative peace because there still was work to do. There was still stuff to heal. And I didn't know that that's what was the purpose for any of this. But when I was guided, okay, you know, I've turned it over to the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit, okay, now, let go of the world, let go of all the things that you think you know about it or yourself and what you think you need to do, blah, blah, you know, and walk with me, and I'll show you what you need to do at all. And so I did do it because I didn't really have a choice in it. I knew that there was no other way. I had really fully surrendered. And I found that as I was guided, it's almost akin to being in a nest and having the mother bird kind of nudge you out of it. Okay, time to fly a little more, time to fly a little more. And what the Holy Spirit was doing was returning me to the world, helping me as I would get more and more in the world again, doing things, having relationships, friendships, working, whatever it is, as I was healing physically in my ability to do these things, each of them carried a story about who I thought I was and what I thought I needed to do and what I thought happened to me and what I thought I did, and I needed to heal it. You know, so I had great resistance at times. Even while I'm listening to the Spirit and Spirit's telling me, okay, you need to do this and whatever. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't do this. I can't face this and blah, blah, blah. So what I love about A Course in Miracles is that the purpose of A Course in Miracles is to get you in touch with your own inner guidance. Your voice for God, to listen to the voice for God. When it tells you to forget this book and forget this course, it's basically with the assumption that you are in touch with the Holy Spirit and you are starting to rely on the Holy Spirit instead of the reflections in the world and the ego perspective and teacher for your guidance. And so it's not to say that once you're done with the workbook, you've graduated life. And if you have a revelatory experience, it's not it either. It's just that as we heal more and more of our mind, peace becomes our new home, and we're remembering the kingdom. And it helps us to build trust and a momentum and a sense of strength and an awareness of our power and our connection with our source as we go and continue to allow the stuff to be healed that needs to be healed as our mind gets healed. So now I'm at a place where I have very little resistance. I have resistance, I will not lie. But I have very little in the sense like, this is how it shows up when there's something real up for me to heal. Holy Spirit will guide me to do something, and I'll be all on board until something looks like, well, it shouldn't be the way it is. And I go, really? Really? It shouldn't be this way. And the spiritual ego says, well, if you were good enough and prayed enough and da-da-da-da, it wouldn't be this way. And then the lesson is acceptance. And what is going on is exactly what I need. And a surrender, and a deeper surrender. And now I'm open for the lesson. Okay, what is it that I'm telling myself about the situation or this person that is blocking me from my peace? And then I ask for the truth instead, and I heal it. I return to peace. I love my brother and myself. I see the situation differently, and I get the lesson. If I don't get it, it will happen again. So I want the lesson. I want to get it, you know? And so that's how I live my life now. So I may be going with it in a, maybe with a little bit of, oh, why am I doing it? But I'm still doing it and really allowing the Holy Spirit to heal my mind, knowing that revelation is like the sweet dessert after the meal of a lesson. You know, revelation is that state of mind knowing that all is really right with the world, that I really do have everything. It's a state of abundance and connection with Source. And it helps in that period of respite that we talked about earlier, as we, again, are ready to go on to the next lesson, to go in that ebb and flow. And like Tom says, even if and when you forget it, it's still there. And so for me, really resting in God and being still and knowing God is easier and easier because I realize that, shit, I did it again. I told myself a story. And I stop and I just say, you know, how would I feel without this story? Who am I? And I just go back to that state of mind before the story was in my mind. And I say, well, I would be at peace. Well, in that case, I really want the truth instead of this. So revelation can be used as kind of an anchor, if you will, to that feeling of just knowing that everything is right, everything is good.